Hey everybody, welcome back to the Amy Rushworth Show. I'm being joined today by an amazing special human being, Julietta. Julietta is a former client of mine and a friend, and she's amazing at what she does. And we're going to talk about what to do when your hormones are ruining your life and killing your vibe. And I'm sure a lot of people listening relate to this. So hopefully this conversation and episode is going to give you some hope, some tools, some guidance around what to do so that you can enjoy being a woman and your hormones are not ruling how you feel about yourself, how you live, how you show up in the world. So welcome, Julietta.
Thank you. I'm excited for this conversation.
Yeah. So do you want to just start by introducing a little bit about your mission in the world, what you do? It's absolutely amazing. So share away.
Thank you. Yeah. So I describe myself as a menstrual cycle nutritionist. I like to also call myself a hormone whisperer. And I'm just literally obsessed with all things hormone health. And you know, the good and the bad and the ugly, I think, is really important to acknowledge all these aspects of hormone health. I've had my own personal sort of experience of really, really like challenging periods of hormonal imbalance in my life, which kind of spurred me on to work with clients one to one, do group programs. And then the other thing that I love to weave in is the concept of cyclical living, understanding our menstrual cycles. We're not meant to feel the same every day. And it's really pulling all of this together. And it's, I really, really love to go into the science to understand what is going on, you know, at the physical, biochemical level, all of that. But then really try and think practically how we can support ourselves and using all like sort of aspects of like healing. Obviously, nutrition's a big one, but there's so many other bits to that. But I'm obsessed with hormones. I absolutely love them. I can't, seriously can't get enough of them.
Yeah, and that's why they call you the hormone whisperer, hey? I love it.
Yep.
So just to speak really candidly, the intuitive nudge that I got to invite you on the show, we've worked together before, you've helped me before, and currently I've been noticing myself that my period hasn't been really regular. Like, it's regular in terms of it shows up on time at the same, you know, frequency each month, but my period has been getting longer. My cramps have been a little bit more like fatiguing and a bit annoying. And I'm just kind of really zoned out and hermity on my period, which is fine because I believe in cyclical living, but in some ways it's not fine because I feel like there's something being communicated to me. And I know you're going through something different and similar at the moment as well. So would you feel comfortable speaking to what you're going through?
Absolutely. Yes. No, I feel that as always, it's all like fallen like perfectly in sort of alignment with what's sort of happening in our lives. So for me, I was sharing with you earlier, I've really like crash landed into perimenopause. And I realized that I've been in a bit of denial about it. So I'm going to turn 46 in a couple of weeks' time. And I think mainly It's because I love the aspect of cyclical living so much. It makes me very sad to wave goodbye to my menstrual cycle. And I'm not there yet. I think I've probably got a few more years of cycling in me. But like all of a sudden, it's exactly like you say, you know, periods have changed. My moods have changed. I can't predict how I'm going to feel from like cycle to cycle. Everything's been turned upside down. So whereas before, maybe, you know, periods were a time for resting, now I'm high as a kite all period long. And then I crash afterwards. And it's very difficult for me to find patterns. And maybe, you know, that's part of the challenge, is like the surrender and the going with the flow. But like, I've also just had a lot of other symptoms turn up. And, you know, in all honesty, mental health things have been coming up. Mood issues have been coming up for me too. My sleep has really, really been hit quite hard. So all of a sudden I find myself like, it's almost like one morning you wake up and you're like, oh, okay, I'm here, you know? And it's just like, what am I going to do about it? And I feel for me, the first step has been to like very openly start talking to everyone about it and sharing and saying, right, I'm in perimenopause. And that's been really, really helpful. But it is very like, very strange experience to have no idea how you're going to feel from day to day. That's the best way I can describe it. So it's been, yeah. And, you know, there's lots of stuff coming up. There's, you know, grief that I'm not going to have a period in the menstrual cycle for many more years. And there's also the kind of worry about aging and how society views menopausal women, and how the anger, because I want to like flip all that around, but equally I still have these very like deep internal sort of like patriarchal ways of thinking that still make me go, oh. So there's all of a sudden I've just found all these emotions coming up for me, and dread, trepidation, anger, sadness. So yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing with us. And you know, I've seen so many women that I know go through a bit of emotional roller coaster with menopause. My mom was in menopause. I feel like she was in menopause or perimenopause for like 10 years or something, and dealing with all these symptoms and still trying to show up in the same way that she had done during her youth, and for work and being successful and switched on, and really struggling with trying to fit into that mold that society expects of women, and almost like deny that aging process or reject it and want to pretend that it's not happening or existing. Mm. And I think what I wanted us to kind of journey into in this episode is, whether it's menopause or you're dealing with a hormonal problem or a womb issue, how we can almost forgive our bodies, forgive ourselves, come into a place of peace and acceptance with being women, and these things that are really, I don't want to always say normal parts of being a woman, but like inherent parts of having a womb and having hormones, and maybe these things becoming invitations to meet ourselves in more compassion.
Absolutely. And you know, I think that's a really important distinction to make, this idea about it being normal versus being an inherent part. They are different in a way, and it's also, I think we need to like have compassion, but at the same time really still want to get ourselves to a place where we feel good, you know. And yeah, it's okay to hold these things in the same, you know, because we can get upset with our bodies, you know, when you've had a 7-8 day period and you're just like, oh, you know, it's to be okay with that frustration, that anger, and at the same time want to seek solutions and not just sit back and be told, oh, that's normal. It's not, it's common, it's not normal, you know. And there's a distinction there. And I think we should never let that dim our fire to advocate for ourselves and really want the best for ourselves hormonally, whilst at the same time being able to hold ourselves in those moments when it is, the shit is literally hitting the fan, you know, in terms of hormones and symptoms, and being really compassionate with ourselves. Because I see, one thing I see a lot, and I'm experiencing myself just now, is, yeah, we feel like we're the ones that have done something wrong. You know, it's like, why are my periods so heavy? Why am I having a challenging perimenopause? I am a hormone whisperer. I should have the perfect perimenopause. And it's not really about that. There are so many things that are impacting our hormone health that we have no control over, like the environment. You know, we can control what food we eat to a point, but how clean is our food really these days? How much plastic crap are we exposed to in the environment that impacts our hormones? What are our phones doing to our hormone health? You know, all of these things that we don't have that much control of sometimes. And so beating ourselves up, I feel that's sometimes, you know, when we're talking about what to do when your hormones go really wild, it's like, I feel that's the place to really come to and try and unpick why we're beating ourselves up so badly. And like you say, like with your mum, why she felt the need to show up perfectly in the world, you know, that's another area that we want to start saying, actually, I'm not okay and I need help, and I do just want to lie in a dark room for 3 days and not do anything.
Yeah, definitely. It's that nuanced thing, isn't it? And very similar to any kind of personal development, it's finding that harmony or that sweet spot between having compassion and normalizing your experience and still also wanting to grow, get better, give yourself the right self-care, the right nourishment. But it can often be a pendulum where you swing between trying to be perfect and perfectly integrity and therefore, if something's wrong with your body, then you haven't done a good job as a holistic spiritual person, or the opposite of just completely normalizing being in pain all the time, or just having to live with these issues and not maybe making some adjustments that would be really loving and nourishing for you. And in the case of my mom, I think, you know, there was probably some emotional stuff there for her around being very independent and almost having to operate like a man, being in a high-powered professional position with mostly men. My mom worked in marketing and advertising, and she was the head of, you know, many, many massive companies full of men, man's world. And she was a single mom because my parents were, they co-parented us, but they were divorced when I was four. So, you know, she had to hold it together for us and try and give everything for us, give us everything we needed. And, you know, she was probably burning the candle at both ends a lot. Funnily enough, she's now a farmer, and she, when she made that lifestyle change, I believe that some of her symptoms got quite a lot better. And she lost a ton of weight that she couldn't shift for many, many years. So yeah, I don't think that's a coincidence.
No, it's so interesting that you say that, you know, like, the body just feeling safe enough to let go of weight that was protecting it, you know, that, because that's a lot of times what's happening with that weight. And just for her symptoms to improve when she's out of that energy and that need to perform the same every day and prove herself to like this very masculine industry and everything, it really, really doesn't surprise me. And I think we can use all these hormonal challenges, you know, to really help us do like it's almost like a life audit, isn't it? It's just like, okay, what are the changes I need to put in place? It's funny because I was talking to a client this morning, and you know, what came up in this call was that she struggles to find anything that makes her feel joyful. She just doesn't know how to feel joy anymore. And even though the really we were going to be talking about hormone testing, we didn't do any of that in the end, because this became like, we need to talk, this is what is alive for both of us today. How are you finding joy? You know, where is all this coming from? And this is someone who is just like sacrificing her entire life for her family and her work, lives in the countryside in a beautiful village here in the UK, but doesn't even get out to enjoy the countryside on a daily basis because she's so stressed and she has so much going on. And, you know, like, if you can turn it around and go, okay, so what is this showing me? In your mum's case, it would have been, you know, working in this masculine industry, putting on this brave front all the time. In my client's case, it's like finding joy, finding those 10 minutes to go out and like just look at the sun, you know, outside in the countryside. All of these things deeply, deeply impact our hormone health. Like, oh my gosh, I think our hormones are just like, they're such a signpost and a barometer for everything, right?
Yeah, totally. Even I was watching something the other day, and it was saying that women need quite a lot more sleep than men because of how our hormones are produced when we sleep. And it was saying something like, you ideally need around 9 hours, whereas men can sort of survive on about 7 because their hormones are just in their testicles all the time, or something like that. I'm not a scientist, clearly. But I was like, yeah, you know, that's a really interesting thing. And it kind of was like a permission slip when I heard this, because I usually need to sleep in quite a lot later than my husband. And it's very easy to think, oh, I'm being lazy. You know, he's getting up at 6 a.m. and doing an ice bath and breath work, and I'm like rolling out of bed at 9 a.m. and needing to just like have a coffee and just sit there and chill for a while. So yeah, like, other than obviously our hormones reflecting maybe what's going on for us with our joy, our emotions, our lifestyle, what are some other things that are just really simple things that help us hormonally?
I think one of the big things, and the more I do this work, the more this comes back every time, is a sense of safety. Like, honestly, feeling safe is probably the biggest foundation to hormone health, health in general, but hormone health, because that's what's going to determine our stress hormone response. And that then cascades to everything else. So, you know, like going back to like caveman times, you know, it's still the same story. Like we were like primed, we're just primed to survive the whole time. And we're constantly looking out for signals of, is this safe? Is this okay? You know, is this safe for my babies? And we are still very much having those same responses. But obviously these days it's, we know this, the emails, the pings on the phone, you know, all the bills, whatever, all of this stuff. And all of these can be potential signs that we're not feeling, that our environment isn't safe. And the minute your environment isn't safe, the body goes into this massive fight or flight or freeze mode. You know, it's all about the adrenaline, the cortisol, all these hormones that, if they are too high or really, really low, they mess up all our other hormones. So our estrogen, our progesterone. And if you think about it, if like if you're living in a cave and there's like the classic tiger, you know, the saber-toothed tiger wandering around all day long, you're not going to prioritize, your body's never going to prioritize having babies. It's just not. Yeah. Why would you do that? Right. So I really think you can probably summarize the kind of the sort of like the key of all hormone health boils down to this concept of safety. And I say that to clients, I'm like, you can use food to make you feel safe. You know, like if you eat wonderful food and you nourish your body, that will create a feeling of safety, which has an incredible knock-on effect. So I really think being really honest with yourself about how safe you're feeling in this world, in your environment, in your relationships, in your friendships, in your career, how are you, how safe are you feeling is probably one of the biggest questions you can ask yourself in terms of hormone health. And then everything else will cascade from there, you know. But I really think that, and I think if you can then reframe everything in this idea of safety, it's like, oh, how can I eat a breakfast that makes me feel safe, you know, rather than the usual, you should be having 20 grams of protein, blah, blah, blah. You know, if you can look at it from this beautiful, like, way of nourishing and bringing about safety in everything you do, I really think you can become your own guide quite quickly, rather than like having to be like, oh, am I eating enough this? Am I eating enough? Not, you know, when you're eating something that's sending your body into like a shock, right? You know, when you're not eating enough, you know, when you're eating too much. So I think going back to the safety concept again and again and again is really, really powerful when it comes to hormone health.
Definitely. I guess also it's important to note that safety and comfort zones are not necessarily the same thing. So if you've become really comfortable binging on lots of food that isn't good for you, that might be a way that you're sourcing almost like a false sense of safety in that moment, but addressing like what is the thing beneath that, and what would be the most nourishing internal way to give myself safety in that moment. And you know, a really good example is, I think people scroll for a long time on Instagram or TikTok to wind down from a stressful day, and it feels comfortable, it feels like a distraction, but actually your nervous system is on the whole time you're scrolling and reacting. And so it's not necessarily that de-stressing as we might think. And so the small shifts like that, I think, are significant. Like if you just took 10 minutes of that scrolling and meditated, or if you have really bad anxiety, maybe don't meditate. Maybe it's, you know, go have a bath and hum or sing or something like that.
Yeah, no. I agree. And we know, right? Because, for example, with the scrolling, how do you feel at the end of that scroll? You know, generally, you have like a niggling sensation of not enoughness, or you're a little bit down, or it's rare that you walk away from like an evening scroll thinking, wow, that was amazing. I'm feeling, you know, there's nothing wrong, of course. You know, like we both use social media for our businesses, and I've made loads of connections in the past few years. So we don't want to detract from that. But it goes back to really being very truthful with yourself. And you know when something isn't serving you. Like we all know deep down most of the time. We still do it. But it's having that honesty and going, okay, you know, because if you think about the whole concept of social media, having, for example, just seeing like all these messages, you can take in like what, about, I don't know, 25 to 30 different messages in a couple of minutes. Imagine if you had a conversation like that, your nervous system would be shot to pieces. You'd just be like, ugh, if you overwhelm, you know. So going back to that, like, is this feeling overwhelming? Is this making me compare myself to others? How do I feel at the end of this? Because all of that has a knock-on effect on your endocrine system, your hormone system. It may release a lot of cortisol, and that cortisol then imbalances your blood sugar, and we then go on these spirals. You may not sleep properly because you saw something that upset you. And we know sleep, I mean, when you ask me what are the cornerstones, sleep is a big one, right? For hormone health, we need to be getting that sleep. So
yeah,
having a think about like, yeah, what are the things that are triggering you the most to feel unsafe? And like you say, having that awareness of safety versus comfort, because they are most definitely not the same. Because I know when I've been in my comfort zones have been sometimes some of the most stressful times of my life.
Yeah, it's familiar, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So, what was I going to ask you? I had a really good question up my sleeve there. I'm on my period right now, so I've got a period brain. So when people have looked at the emotional stuff, I guess there's also the conversation around what's physically going on here, because sometimes it can be a mix of everything, right? But sometimes it's very physical things that you're doing. Okay. My brain is back online. I've thought of what it is. Let's talk about a controversial topic. Intermittent fasting for women. I don't know what team everyone is on who's listening. A lot of women I know, a lot of friends of mine love intermittent fasting. What I've also noticed is that many of them have actually struggled with fertility when they've gone to have a baby. Not saying that it's linked, because that's a very complex conversation. Yeah. But I would love to hear what your thoughts are on intermittent fasting for women, because I know when we worked together, this is one of the first things that you told me to stop doing.
Yeah. I'm I think it's such a good question and something that's very important to talk about. So fasting for women is, I think it can still be done, but very, very differently to the way men fast. And because again, it's going back to this concept of safety. And if we're not eating enough, or we are going through massive, massive, massive long windows, all that is doing is letting the body know that there's the environment is scarce and there aren't enough supplies for us or enough food or whatever. And so we just, what happens in the female body is it clicks into this massive survival fat storing mode or muscle breaking down mode and all of these things. It's not to say it can't be done. There's now a little bit more research coming out, because the other problem is most of the research on fasting is either done on mice, male mice, or men, right? So, or the studies are there, but they don't tell you about the gender. So it's very difficult to arrive at any conclusion. But generally, all the conclusions, all these health claims seem to come from when we've been looking at men fasting. And, you know, just like you said, your husband, he can get up at 6, do an ice bath, do all sorts of crazy things, probably eat ketogenic, blah, 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 have a great time. And he thrives on that. You know, for you, it's kind of like, you might thrive for a while, but then you'll see yourself, maybe your energy coming down or whatever. So we can fast, and there's now recently this book come out, is called Fast Like a Girl by Mindy Peltz. I wouldn't agree. I don't agree with everything she says either. I think she's a bit like blasé. She believes you can do like 24-hour fasts during your period, which I'm a bit like, I don't know if that's so much the case. But she does talk about how we need to think about fasting within the menstrual cycle. There are points in our cycle where we can fast a bit more than others. So for example, that build up to ovulation is a great time to fast. Probably don't fast when you're building up for your period. You know, think about different ways of fasting.
Unless you want to have a mental breakdown.
Or you want to kill someone, you know, if you're in a murderous mood, I think that's a good time to do it. But and there is this concept of, you know, the fasting window. So I think some of the research that they finally found for women is that, you know, some men will do like 16 hours, 18 fasting. That's too long for women. We need maximum 14. Like, that's what we need to be thinking about. Yeah. So not those really, really long fasts. It's also like, how are you breaking your fast? Because I'm actually working with a couple of clients at the moment. We're trying to optimize the way they want to fast. And it's it's how are you breaking your fast as well? You know, are you just like literally getting to that point where you're ravenous and you're just eating anything that's coming your way, and then you spend the whole day snacking because you can't get your blood sugar out of control? If you're doing that, that's not going to be beneficial for you, right? So thinking about how you're breaking your fast. The other big one, and you know that I'm always going on about this, is this, oh, fasting and just having black coffee all morning, because that is wonderful, you know? I'm like, it really annoys me, because the whole of the fasting world is like, oh, black coffee doesn't break your fast. No, it doesn't break your fast, but it releases huge amounts of cortisol, our main stress hormone, like continuously. And we don't really do very well when we are releasing nonstop cortisol. Like, you know, say you wake up at about 7 or 8 and you're drinking black coffee all morning until you break your fast at lunchtime. That's like 4 or 5 hours of sustained cortisol release, which long term can impact fertility, because it will impact our progesterone and our estrogen, right? So I've seen other women fasting who have lost a lot of hair, or whose periods have got very, very light. And all of these signs are generally ones of like, you're moving away from optimal fertility and you're starting to move to real survival mode, you know, just clinging on. That's why your hair falls out. Your body's not even prioritizing the hair anymore. It's like, yeah, whatever, you know, we need these minerals to keep us going. So I suppose my summary would be, women can fast. You should think about fasting at certain points in the cycle. So in the build up to ovulation and ovulation, you know, you don't feel hungry at that time. Brilliant. Never fast in your luteal phase, your inner autumn, like, please. and don't ever do more than about a 14-hour window, and really try to do it without black coffee. I can't, even though all the research is like, it doesn't break your fast, it's amazing. I'm just like, it just doesn't make any sense to be like downing this like adrenaline stroke cortisol potion all the time.
Yeah. Well, what I heard is the reason for this is that your cortisol levels, so cortisol being the stress hormone, are very high in the morning to actually break you out of your sleep. And so then if you're on an empty stomach, you're having coffee that's making that increase even more. You're beginning your day, which affects your sleep later that night, with basically like a huge infusion of stress hormone, which eventually is going to create belly fat, right? Because that's what happens to women's bodies when you get chronically stressed, is it holds on to that fat. My next point that I want to make, because normally whenever I have a conversation with someone, I don't particularly say that I'm like anti it, but I say, you know, if you're thinking of having a baby or worried about your hormones, you should research this. A lot of women will say, well, I'm not hungry in the morning. But I was looking into this, and something that I was watching was saying that if you're fasting in the morning all the time, then you won't be hungry. But if you start eating, then that appetite's going to come back in the morning. And that's a sign that you're in like a healthy, harmonious balance with your circadian rhythm as well.
Yes. Absolutely. It's a bit like, you know, people who don't drink any water or very little, and they're like, I'm not thirsty. That's my dad, classic. Like, he drinks like half a glass of water a day. And I'm like, yes, but if you drank more, you do get thirstier, because your body gets used to it and wants more. And it's exactly the same. And we don't, I think the other problem is, as women, because of all the conditioning we've had from the wellness industry and diets, and maybe like seeing our mums do all sorts of restrictive, like follow all sorts of restrictive ways of eating, I think there's something about, ooh, I won't eat, I'll try and put off eating for as long as possible throughout the day. You know, like, it almost feels like you are controlling your, you know, your weight or things like that. And it comes from a place of, yeah, it's not the healthiest of mindsets to start like that, I feel. And it can get addictive, because you can feel quite good when you're fasting, because you are literally, you will be releasing endorphins. It's kind of like what the body does, because if you think about it, when we were really starving and there was no food, it was a mechanism to make you feel quite high to kind of survive and get by, you know. So in the short term, it does feel good. You know, I have clients who say to me, but I have so much focus, you know, and if the minute I start having breakfast, I get really sluggish. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's because your blood sugar is really quite dysregulated. And so we need to really work on stable blood sugar throughout the day. You know, if you only ever feel good by not eating, that's telling us that we need to think about what else is going on. In the same way people say, I never have any gut problems when I don't eat. And again, it's like, well, that's not really the solution for long-term gut health, is not to eat. You know, it's kind of how can we go deeper? But it's a tricky one, because I think initially it can feel good and it is a bit addictive as well, because you're like, and then you're like, oh, maybe today I'll do an extra half hour. Ooh, you know, and then you're like, oh, a water fast. What's that? You know, and you kind of go, it's a bit of a slippery slope.
Yeah, totally. I think a lot of women, it comes also from wanting to be a certain size and have a flat stomach, because a lot of people wake up with a really flat stomach. And then as soon as they eat, their stomach changes and they kind of think, well, I liked the way that it looked when there was no food in it, because that's what our society and our culture glorifies, is, you know, women with these stomachs that don't even look like they have organs in it. And, you know, it is sad. I do wonder how many women would actually want to do intermittent fasting if their weight didn't change at all from it.
I wonder too. I think the thing about intermittent fasting as well, I work with quite a few clients and they're really resistant to changing it, like very resistant, even though they'll come and they'll say to me, I want to heal my hormones. And I'm like, brilliant. Eat some breakfast. No. <That's> goes. And it's really funny, you know, and it's so interesting. I'm like, wow, where is this resistance? This is deep, 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 because you're coming to me because you clearly want some support. But you won't do the one thing that probably is going to really start helping with that kind of like hormone healing journey. And it's I suspect, like you say, it's probably really like focused around body image and all of these things. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, beauty standards probably lead to us doing things or buying things, putting things on our body that are these massive endocrine disruptors. So like, you know, a lot of the beauty products that we use, I mean, men don't use even probably 1% of the things we use. They use the same cream for their hair, their face, their underarms, their bum, you know, like 4-in-1. They've probably got the fairy like dish detergent just as their body wash, you know. But there's so many hormone disruptors in the things that we use or we like to use or we feel comfortable using. And then you throw in things like intermittent fasting, contraceptive methods. There's so many things stacked against the hormones that, you know, it's no wonder maybe there's so much disruption to them. And also some of that, I guess, is not fully our fault, because we all live in this soup of expectations, you know, in the world and being a woman.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I'm really glad you've raised this idea of all these chemicals in our environment, because I feel this is the area where sometimes we can feel the most helpless, because, it, you know, you do all your research and you're like, oh, you know, I'm using all organic and blah, blah, blah. But like, if you're living in a city or if you live in the countryside, there's going to be pesticides being sprayed. They are well-known endocrine disruptors. If you live in a city, the pollution's an endocrine disruptor. Now we hear things that indoor air is way, way worse for us than outdoor air. So then you end up in this like, oh my God, I don't know what to do.
Oh, man.
You know, and it's and everything. And, you know, like sometimes I did a post recently about air fryers not being good for your hormones.
Oh no.
A lot of love for it and a lot of hate as well.
I bet you did. Once you're 30, the air fryer is like your main party trick, your main flex.
Absolutely. But you know what I was trying to say was like, think about the coatings to these things. If you're using it a lot and you're thinking it's healthy, please just be aware that these coatings may not be so good for us. You can find air fryers that are stainless steel. You know, there are options, but I feel that like sometimes this whole area can feel really, really, really overwhelming. And I think it's just acknowledging that there are some things that there's nothing we can do about them, right? And it's just being okay with that and being okay with doing what we are doing.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you get even more stressed.
Yeah. Focusing on the small changes that add up and that feel empowering and within your control. So on that note, what are the simple things if someone feels like there's something off with their period, their hormones, they're going through perimenopause, like what are some of the just really small things that make a big difference in the long term?
Yeah. So I think sleep makes a big difference, but I realize sometimes it's a bit glib just to say, oh, sleep, because sometimes the hormonal issues are the ones driving the bad sleep. So it becomes a bit of a chicken and egg question. But, you know, are you like staying away from your screen like an hour before bed, you know, or are you doing something relaxing before bed? Even if your sleep isn't great, are you at least getting into bed at a reasonable time? Our hormones love consistency. Like, just think of hormones as the most boring relatives you've ever had in your life. You know that, you know, that great uncle that goes to bed every night at 7 p.m. and always eats the same food and always wakes up the same day, always wears the same tie on a Tuesday. That is what our hormones love. They love predictability. They love the same times. So, you know, sometimes we have, that's where we can really put a bit of work in and get pretty good results, because it's that, you know, we our hormones all operate on a circadian rhythm. So they have a 24-hour body clock to them. So send them signals at specific times of the day. Try to eat always roughly at the same time. And I'm not here to like take all the joy out of our lives, you know, like we don't have to do that, but like really having some very, very steady rhythms to your day can be very, very powerful for hormone health. In terms of nutrition, eating a ton of vegetables, like our hormones love vegetables. It helps them be detoxified. It gives us loads of antioxidants. I'm not saying you have to be vegan, far from it. We need good protein and good fats. But, you know, if I can summarize hormone like nutrition, it's eat a load of plants, eat really, really good quality protein from animal and plant sources, and have some nice things like oily fish and avocados and olives. There you go. That's in a nutshell what to do.
Amazing. Yeah. I remember you said to me that eating eggs is really good for hormones and fertility as well. I think I eat at least one egg every single day and always good quality eggs.
Yeah. Eggs are spectacular. Good quality protein is so important because our hormones are made from protein. So we need to give them the raw materials. I think another nutrient that gets very bad rap is cholesterol. But if you were to ever geek out and get like a chart of all the hormones, if you go back to the very, very top of the chart, that's where cholesterol sits. And we need cholesterol to make pregnenolone, to make progesterone, to make cortisol, you know. And I think we're no longer really, really convinced by the low fat diets, but I still come across people who are very uneasy when I tell them to eat some nuts every day, you know, or to eat like more than half an avocado. They're a bit like, oh, that feels like a real edge to me, you know. And just thinking about where all your good fats coming from and where is this lovely cholesterol. Cholesterol is amazing. Like, we need to be talking about it more, definitely.
Yeah. I love eating lots of like good quality butter and olive oil and everything. Mm. I live in Spain, so there's the best olive oil everywhere. And I'm just like, lube me up with that oil. Give me that butter. Give me those fats. Amazing. And with the circadian rhythms and getting more into that rhythm, that's going to have a knock-on effect on more than just the hormones, I guess, because the hormones are then influencing your sexuality and your libido. And then like that's influencing your sleep, and that's influencing then like the kind of foods you might reach for when you're not as tired. And so it's like this big like wheel of things that influence each other, I guess. And it sounds like just making really small tweaks. It doesn't have to be these like radical life shifts becoming keto or vegan overnight or suddenly like doing all this crazy shit. It's like, how can you just make small, like consistent changes in your everyday?
Yeah, it really is. And they are so powerful, because don't forget, all of these changes are sending signals to your brain the whole time. And the brain is always like, what's going on here? Is this good? Is this safe? Is this a yes? And if you can send these beautiful signals back of stability, we're going back to the concept of safety, of just like predictability, all of those are very, very calming for the nervous system, but also will have this beautiful knock-on effect on all our hormonal cascades. So yeah.
My dog has just joined us.
I can see.
He loves a good lick, the Labrador. Amazing. Cool. So something that I've had to deal with, and I'm sure many other people deal with, is when they've got an issue, or they might not know what the issue is. So their period's being weird, or they're like, am I going through menopause? They're experiencing something that's abnormal. I think the dreaded next step is, okay, do I go to the doctor, or who can tell me what's going on? And I've had so many friends who have been to the normal doctor, the normal allopathic, you know, pathway, and either felt really invalidated, or they've gotten tests done and the doctor says, there's nothing wrong with you, but they know there's something really wrong with me right now. This is not normal. What kind of tests, or who should they look up, go to, and what kind of tests do they request?
Yeah, this is like a huge, huge topic, and there's so much here that makes me really angry and really sad at the same time. And unfortunately, you know, it's you go down that route, and then it's like, okay, so what do I do next? So I would always recommend still go to your doctor, but know that that's not your only option, because, you know, for example, if you came to me and you said you were having heavy periods, I would still recommend that you go and get some kind of scan done, some investigations done, you know, like you could have a scan done privately as well, but, you know, still go to the doctor and see what they say. I always feel, if you can like go to the doctor, but have somebody else like cheerleading you on, like in the corner, you know, like say you can go to like a functional hormone nutritionist, or anybody working in the field of hormones, to just give you that little bit of extra support. I think that can be a really, really good combination, because you know, for example, if you suspect you have something like endometriosis, or you suspect you have fibroids, these conditions take quite a long time to diagnose. Endometriosis, for example, I think the statistics are ridiculous, something like it takes 10 years to get an endometriosis diagnosis. So I feel you still have to go to your doctor, but also always listen to your instincts. And when they turn around and say, there's nothing wrong with you, you'll be like, okay, I know that something is up. I don't like the wrong with you word, but something is up. Mm-hmm. So I really think, you know, we're really lucky now, because social media is full of people with expert knowledge, etc. So reaching out and finding somebody who can support you alongside the allopathic journey, if you need to, is a really important side. I mean, I do a lot of this. People book calls with me all the time because they're like, I've been to the doctor. They've told me there's nothing wrong with me. I've got, you know, heavy periods, really, really bad PMS. I think I've got PMDD, blah, blah, blah. And I will support them alongside. But unfortunately, you know, and I've been thinking about this a lot, like, there aren't any real like organizations, or almost like, I feel like we need like a charity or something that is almost called something like What Next, or What the Hell Do I Do, or something, you know, like, yeah, almost like a one-stop shop where you come along and you're like, I've got these things, and then somebody there could direct you. At the moment, it's like practitioners like myself who can support you. But I think my message is really go and find someone who can support you. And, you know, for example, if you message me on Instagram, I will direct you in the right, like, direction. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to work with me, but please don't ever sit there in silence, or suffer in silence, or, you know, think almost like gaslight yourself because you've been told you are normal or there's nothing wrong with you. Seek help, find people that you resonate with, go into forums. They can be a little bit sort of like overwhelming sometimes, but, you know, look them up and go, okay, there are charities that will specialize in specific conditions, maybe get a bit of information there. You have to really advocate for yourself. You know, there's no two ways about it. Like, you have to almost become like a hormone superhero, your own superhero, because no one else will do it for you.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of support out there if you make a real sort of like focused intention to reach out and find the right people to help you.
Yeah. Would have preferred a class on this rather than religious studies in high school, to be honest.
Yeah. No.
And classes about parallelograms. A friend of mine, she actually got a diagnosis of a condition. I don't want to like say too much or violate her confidentiality, but you know, she was told by doctors that the only solution was, I think it was something very invasive, like cutting something out. And she read this incredible book called In the Flow. I don't know if you're familiar with this. Alyssa Vitti, I think.
Alyssa Vitti, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And so she went away and for a month religiously followed everything in this book, like what to eat in certain weeks, followed all the principles in it. And she went back about a month later and one of these, you know, lumps was basically gone and the other one was shrunk by half or something. And the doctors were like, what did you do? Oh my God, because you didn't take this medication and blah, blah. And she was like, I read this book, you should give it to your patients. And they and they couldn't believe it. But I thought that was really empowering. So I wanted to mention that book because I think I'm going to read it soon and see if some of those things help me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think putting at least Alisa Vitti is actually the reason why I got into cyclical living. She wrote her first book's called Woman Code, and that's the book that I picked up and blew my mind. You know, when you're like, fuck, I didn't know any of this. It's amazing. And yeah, books can be so empowering. There are a couple of others like Fix Your Period, The Period Repair Manual, you know, Coming Off the Pill books. There's so many brilliant books out there that are so empowering. Yeah, but I think it's like you take matters into your hand, you don't take no for an answer, you trust your instincts, you know when things aren't right, and you keep on fighting until you find someone who will listen to you or you find something that works for you.
Yeah, it's not easy, is it? Especially if you're in pain every day and you've got doctors telling you to just go on the pill to like make the symptoms go away. I can really empathize with why. I think it's almost shamed in the spiritual and holistic industry of like, if you're just on the pill, you're just masking your symptoms. And I guess there is a truth in that, but also I can really empathize with why people get to that point where they just do it because, you know, if there's a pill that's going to make you not be in pain every day, maybe it's very tempting to do that. And, you know, not do that advocacy work for yourself because it's not fair and it's not easy and it's not straightforward at all. Like I'm very knowledgeable and I'm still very confused sometimes about where do I go for this? What should I do for that? You know, it's not a walk in the park.
It's not. And, you know, like as you're saying that, I'm also thinking about HRT and how there's two camps with hormone replacement therapy, right? There's the people who are like, oh my God, no, you should do menopause naturally. And then there are people who like, I need those hormones straight away. And, you know, I don't think either camp is wrong or right. And I can understand, you know, like if you have day in, day out of feeling like in a way that you've never felt before or a depression that you've never experienced in all your life, you may want to consider something like HRT. And I don't think there should be any shame in that. But especially in this kind of world that we're in, there is an added shame, you know, like you think, oh gosh, would I ever admit to doing HRT? Like, what do I, you know, there's all of this stuff that comes up for us as well.
Yeah, totally. Lots of binary thinking. And I'm sort of always trying to hold the nuance and different perspectives of everything. I think different things are empowering for different people. Like for some women being on contraception is they would think that that's not empowering. And then for other women, they would think that's a really feminist empowering option to have based on their circumstances, their like lived history, you know, how they live. So I think it's just about like, I think the most empowering thing you can do as a woman is to find your own opinion and what works best for you and to like make moves in that direction.
Yeah. 100%. And yeah, like I've got clients who really do well on the pill and it's like, okay, brilliant. I'm jealous because I could never do the pill, you know, like they used to turn me into an absolute lunatic. But you know, if it's working for you or if it's keeping things at bay, then no judgment, go ahead and do it.
Yeah, totally. Amazing. Well, it's been such a gift to have you come on the show and share your wisdom. And How would you recommend people get in touch with you? Do you have any resources that they should dive into if they really resonated with this episode?
Yeah, so I'm probably most active on Instagram. So please drop me a message, DM me. You know, it's always an absolute honor to be able to support people. And like I said, it's not necessarily that I will work with you, but I can always at least direct you somewhere for support or might be that, be like, oh, read this book, whatever. So please, if you want to ask me anything about what we've talked about today, that's the place to go. In terms of resources, So I now have like some like really nice hormone balancing meal plans that are like, you know, really affordable, a great way to start. I think sometimes we sit there going, oh my God, like, should I eat this? Should I eat that? So I just put these together as a really fun entry point for just getting to know your hormones a bit better. And I have my own podcast where I'm always talking about hormones and things like that. So come along to that. That's called the Fem Powered Podcast. But literally, please, anything that has come up for you today, I would love to like hear you sharing with me, because it's just always so wonderful to connect and just like hear another story and be able to support in some way or other.
Yeah. And it's also so nice to have people like you who could just, nothing is too much information. You know, it's like, it, for a lot of people, it's not very normal to talk about their periods and they don't know what's normal and not normal, or if there's something wrong, because there's nowhere that is being openly discussed, or, you know, even things that are normally like too much information, like clots or weird juices and smells and, you know, all the crazy things that go on with being a woman and having a woman's body. And so it's
There's
nice to
never
have.
too much TMI when it comes to the more TMI, the better. I'm like, yes, tell me exactly what color it was. Yes,
Yeah.
okay, lovely.
How are your bowels today? Tell me. I want to know everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Like, there's a little chart for bowels called the Bristol stool chart. You may have seen it, and I quite often
Oh,
see. Oh, really? It's like
awesome.
nine different types of bowel movement. I love that chart so much. I'm always like, show me, what does your look like? Because people don't know how to describe, and they, you know, we don't really look at anybody else's poo, let alone our own. So how
Yeah.
do you know? Do you know what I mean? So the chart, you're like, right, you tell me where you are, and then you're like, oh, interesting.
Yeah, it should be normal, right? It's happening every day, multiple times a day, everyone on the planet. So, yeah, I love it. Amazing. Thank you so much. I hope
You're
everyone loved the
welcome.
episode, and reach out to Julietta if you need her magical period whispering services in your life.
You.
Amazing.